Game On on 2FM with Green Fern. Naturally good food packed with protein.
A massive thank you to Jenny Green, although to be honest, I cannot believe the movie quotes wasn't won by "Are you not entertained?" from Gladiator. Jenny's back with you tomorrow at 3, kicking off the weekend. It's Thursday, the 27th of August, and this is Game On.
I'm really ashamed of you that you didn't come up with a Toy Story or like Disney related.
To infinity.
There we go. So we're here for infinity and beyond. Anyway, coming up today, we got the latest on a historic walkout in the NBA playoffs last night.
I want to bring in the great Charles Barkley.
Sure, I know other teams have been talking about it, but it took the Bucks to lead the forefront. Giannis and Coach Budenholzer and those guys, it took great courage.
Damien, I can't wait for this. We've Stephen Ferris on the Interpro Rugby and the latest COVID scare to hit our provinces.
Yes, training has been suspended for the Ulster senior and academy squads. The club last night revealing multiple academy players have tested positive for COVID-19. One senior squad member has also been identified as a potential close contact.
We have Irish clubs in Europa League action. Can I mention that Bohemians already 1-0 up? Bohemians are 1-0 up.
You're glued to it there.
Who are you? What are you? Where am I? What? Half an hour gone. Plus, we'll also meet the armless archer whose Paralympic medals and world records are amongst the subject of a brilliant new Netflix documentary.
You know, I've been thinking about it, and I feel like having no arms is actually a benefit to shooting. Not necessarily from the standpoint of form, but on the mental side.
Game On on 2FM.
Yeah, Donal Cullen and Damien O'Mara taking you right through to 7 o'clock with Tara Stewart. You can text us on 51552 or tweet at Game On 2FM. I love that. Marie mightn't be in studio, but one thing stays the same, Damien. You are someone in that seat watching football as we're on air.
Well, you see, Donica, I'm a firm fan of trying to support League of Ireland football clubs, so I have gladly paid the €10. Now, actually, I'll be very honest with you. I had paid my €10 to buy the stream of the Bohemians Europa League game and then realised, oh, hang on a second, I'm on the radio at 6 o'clock and the game kicks off at 5:30. So I will...
It's great news for all of us, though. You can keep us up to date like you already have.
There's 32 minutes played. Bohs are away in Hungary and they lead by a 0-2 through Keith Ward in the 21st minute. Do you know, I know we're going to be talking to Tony O'Donoghue, who's in Talla for the Shamrock Rovers game later on. And come on, for fear that I would be accused of pro-Bohs bias, you can buy the stream of the Shamrock Rovers match as well. And I think since Watch LOI came into operation, people have got far more into watching streams of games, so it's a good way of supporting local League of Ireland clubs. So we'll check in with Tony. We've had like a really bad result for Dundalk last week. We had a poor performance and mistakes which cost Derry over the course of the week. To be very honest, like, and Bohemians have been very honest about this in advance, the club Ferrovar that they play in Hungary tonight are 250 places above them in the club index. So I don't think, you know, Keith Long isn't going to Hungary tonight in expectation of a win. He's going in hope of a victory, but it'd be brilliant if Shamrock Rovers or Bohs or one of the clubs involved could get a result, because it would give domestic football a bit of a shot in the arm. But yeah, 32 minutes played, and I will be very, you know, the way, like, I'm sure the same thing happens to you when you're talking about Munster. Sometimes you are most critical of the ones you love the most. And I'm not trying to gloss it up here, but Bohs are playing really well. So
brilliant.
Yeah,
do we park the bus now or what, Damien? What do they do?
Do we park the bus?
All I see is Irish jerseys now.
I will sign your membership application forms if you want. So 32 minutes played. It's a bit early to park the bus just yet.
Come here, there's loads going on. I'd be really interested in your view on Lionel Messi. Just, I know, you know when sport is back, Damien, for me, when there's these kind of, for want of a better word, water cooler moments. Mm. You know that you can chat to your buddies and it's just out there. And Lionel Messi is one of them at the moment, isn't he?
Can I make a prediction? A bold prediction?
He's going to sign for Bohs.
No, Bartomeu, the president of Barcelona, will resign before the season gets underway, and Lionel Messi will stay, having won the ultimate power struggle.
Wow, you're making it sound like the West Wing or House of Cards or something.
Do you know, the thing that has really interested me and bemused me slightly over the last couple of days is that you've got, and come here, it's off-season and it's silly season and people need to fill newspapers, and okay, Matt Doherty's going from Wolves to Spurs, which is interesting from an Irish perspective, but aside from from that, there's an awful lot of stuff that you can, there's not massive news going on. Yeah. I found it slightly humorous that the amount of supposed pundits who are coming out over the last couple of days going, well, realistically, there's one of two places which he could likely end up in. One is Paris Saint-Germain and the other is Manchester City, as if it is like Woodward and Bernstein to suggest that any other, like, I saw someone tweeting during the week that Man United have made contact with him. It's like, The only reason Man United would have any reason to contact Lionel Messi around this is if they had a flat or a mansion somewhere in Manchester they wanted to rent him should he end up at City, because Bose have as much chance of signing him as Manchester United do.
Well, did you see Man City's new jersey? If anyone needs to sign Lionel Messi, you like it's Man City. I saw their new strip. I'd be a fan of a jersey, and I saw the Man City new strip. I don't know if you've seen it yet.
Yeah, it's like it's almost like it's not quite tie dye, but it's like someone had a bucket of blue paint and they had a bit of white paint on the top of it and they dipped the jersey in it. And
it's horrendous, isn't it?
Did I read somewhere? Is it inspired by Gaudi? Is it all about Guardiola and it's that little Barcelona influence?
Here we go.
Have you ever done the? Have you ever been to Barcelona?
I have. It's a fantastic place.
Have you done the red bus tour of Barcelona?
Yeah, I loved it because I got a great old tan on it.
Oh, there. Well, opposed to where do you normally get your tan? When do you not have a tan? You got a tan. That's like you can't get something
move
you
on,
have.
Damien, move
okay,
on.
Sorry. I keep forgetting we're on the radio. But you can't go like one stop without them mentioning there's Gaudi, whatever you want to call him. So I did see it suggested somewhere. I read a great thing during the week that Liverpool's away jersey, it's a kind of a it actually looks like you're walking past an aquarium window. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't.
Have Google it there. So it's teal with a kind of a black.
Teal's a lovely colour. We're painting the house at home and teal got mentioned.
Okay, there you go. Yeah, so well done. It's teal, but Liverpool have a new kit provider this year, and one of the marketing hype around it is that the jerseys are cut from one massive piece of fabric, so it means that every jersey has a different design.
Oh.
Now, if that's not the most useless piece of marketing spin that you're ever going to hear from a kit provider.
Yeah, absolutely. Interested to hear people's views on it. 51552, what's the worst kit? What's the worst jersey that teams have gone out on? You mentioned Matt Doherty there heading to Spurs. Would that be good news, Damien, for Bulls?
Yeah, there's a 10% sell-on clause in the contract. So, like, it's an interesting story. Like, Matt Doherty has become somewhat of a folk hero around Bohemians, despite the fact that I said to somebody earlier on, sorry, Bows have just conceded a penalty, so you're going to hear my heart break in just a moment. Oh yeah, and they've equalised, so it's now 1-1.
I should have parked the bus, Damien, I said it.
You were right. So, like, Doherty, I think aside from a Leinster Senior Cup game, never played a first-team match for Bohemians. And you have this quirk during, obviously now because the League of Ireland is a summer season, where English clubs come over for pre-season friendlies, and you'll have a situation where the League of Ireland's first team will play on a Friday night, and then their kids and reserves will play, you know, the Chelsea first team on a Saturday lunchtime. Okay. You know, so yeah, he played for Bows against Wolves in a friendly, and the next thing, Mick McCarthy apparently was in the manager's office. So Pat Fenlon, who was the Bows manager at the time, maybe his lasting legacy at Dalyman Park is he put a 10% sell-on clause in the contract. So like, I saw people last night saying it's not going to be 18 million, it's only going to be 15 or 12 million. But I think if you're Bohemians and you're going to get 1.2, 1.5 or 1.8 million, if you get 1.2 million for a fella who never played, you know, a first team game of note, like, he's gone on to have a phenomenal career. But 1.2 million to a League of Ireland club.
Super.
Yeah, so in terms of, yeah, clear debts or, you know, Bows have no training ground or no training base. So I think that's a priority for the club. So
it's great, though. I think that's brilliant that they get rewarded for nurturing the talent. I think, you know, the money that's in the game, and look, we've been chatting about Messi, the money that's there, it'd be great to see it filter back to our clubs that have, you know, brought this talent. What about the move for him himself, moving to Spurs from Matt Doherty? Do you think that's a good move?
I don't know. About you, but from a player's perspective, you get to a certain point in your career, and presumably because he has spent the vast amount of his career with one club, okay, he's not going to be on the breadline, you know, making good money as all Premier League footballers do. But I don't know what your experience would be, but when you're at a club for the duration of your career, presumably you're not earning quite as much as fellas who perhaps were brought in later on in their career might be, because you grow slightly as you go up. So I'd imagine it has the potential for a bit of a payday for him towards the tail end of his career. And, you know, the prospect of perhaps pushing into Champions League football, playing for a manager like Mourinho for as long as he will last at White Hart Lane or the new White Hart Lane?
That's the one area I'd be really interested in. Like, would you want to play with Mourinho? You know, just looking at the Amazon Prime doc on him at the moment, he's entertaining and he's brilliant.
He's the ultimate showman.
Yeah.
Did I ever tell you about the night I interviewed Jose Mourinho?
No, go.
So I went, Darren Maloney tells a better story than I, but I was away in Moscow for Man United against, I think it was Spartak Moscow in the Champions League a couple of years ago. And, you know, we go downstairs and there's ourselves, Russian television, whoever else, Norwegian television, I remember, were there. And the managers come out and they will do very limited interviews. And we were told, if Mourinho will do four interviews, you are the fourth interview. And he came out and like shook hands with the cameraman, the lighting man, the sound man, the floor manager, everything. Where are you from? I'm from Ireland. Do you want to ask me about the goalkeeper? They had like an Irish under 21, Kieran O'Hara, goalkeeper in the squad. And then the minute the interview starts, he goes into like Mourinho mode, and it's like monosyllabic grunts and, you know, arrogance beyond possibility. No. And then the minute the interview is finished, it's like selfies and, you know, thanks pal, great to meet you, you know, look after yourself, all this sort of. He's just the ultimate showman. I think he's brilliant, I love him. Whereas Dara has told the story where Dara interviewed him at Chelsea one night, and at the end of the interview held his hand out to shake his hand. I think it could have been the night that they led against Barcelona and ended up drawing, and he basically like just looked at Dara's hand and walked away. Yeah. And then came back afterwards to apologise, to say, well, you know, I have to play the part. So
he plays both sides of
there
it.
You go,
looking at it, it's been a historical 24 hours in American sport, and the fight for change. Major sporting events across the states have been postponed after players united to take a stance against racial injustice following the shooting of Jacob Blake. Last night, three NBA games were postponed after the Milwaukee Bucks boycotted their fixture with the Orlando Magic in the NBA, and the Bucks protest was the landmark stance, which quickly followed by the women's NBA, Major League Soccer, baseball, and the women's tennis, which is currently underway in New York. We're thankful to be joined from Mississippi by our teammate Jeff Shepherd. Jeff, how are you?
I'm doing great, guys. How are y'all this afternoon?
We're good, Shep. Just looking on at everything that's gone on, sports stars, teams, they finally had enough and they're making a historical stance.
Yeah, you know, guys, this just continues what we've been talking about, you know, really the last, you know, couple of months on the show about the decisions that, particularly in the NBA, I mean, look, Adam Silver is a commissioner. I mean, it almost seems like a name only. I mean, the players are running the league right now. I mean, you know, LeBron James is you know, clearly one of the most influential people in America right now. And some of the, you know, comments that he's been making. And look, the Milwaukee Bucks, you know, Milwaukee is in the state of Wisconsin where Kenosha is, where the this shooting occurred earlier this week. And so the Bucks just felt like they couldn't really go out and play a game. They were speaking with the lieutenant governor of the state of Wisconsin, which in the states is basically like the second in command in the state of Wisconsin. And they were discussing what were some of the things that they could do, and how could they really, you know, try to make an impact. And they just decided really, you know, maybe 5 or 10 minutes before the game that they, I mean, it wasn't like they planned it all day. I mean, it was something that they decided kind of, you know, in the last couple of minutes before the game. I mean, the Orlando Magic were out on the court warming up, preparing for the game. So, but once the Magic realized that they weren't coming out, they said, you know, we're gonna join y'all in this protest. And, you know, they're likely going to postpone the games today. Kind of in some breaking news, you know, that they just had a meeting this morning that the games will likely be postponed today with the resumption either tomorrow or maybe Saturday at the latest. But again, it's just the next step in sort of this kind of player empowerment movement and you know, protesting and, you know, trying to get as much attention for these issues of social justice as they can.
Shep, just on that, like, we know they're in an isolated bubble. Do you think they feel even a greater power within that bubble to, you know, to represent outside, to represent, when you look at the Milwaukee Bucks, to represent where they're from?
So that's an interesting question, Donners, because I think some of the comments that I've seen, it's almost like it's going both ways. Yes, they feel like they have this ability in the bubble to make a stand. And if you're watching basketball, you know, you're a fan of the NBA, you're going to be watching these games, and so they know they have an audience there. But they, some of the players have expressed the wish to be able to be back in their home communities, that if there were going to be marches or there were going to be protests, and I'm not talking about the violent ones or the ones that have turned violent, I'm talking about like the initial ones, they want to be involved in those. You know, they want to be out there in the streets marching, holding signs, which a lot of athletes were able to do earlier, when the George Floyd situation first occurred in Minneapolis, because the seasons hadn't started back. We were still under the whole COVID lockdown. And so there were NFL and NBA players in all of the major cities marching in the streets. And I think some of the current NBA players, because they're in the bubble, obviously are not able to do that, and they've expressed a wish to do it. So they want to try to figure out the way that they can do it inside of the bubble, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Just on it, I've seen it in my own sport in rugby, how it can be used as a tool for political and social change with Nelson Mandela and South Africa in the World Cup. Mm-hmm. You would have seen it last night, no doubt yourself. Everyone's sitting down to watch sport and be entertained. And for this type of a statement, we've seen players to threaten to walk off before. We've seen the different stance made. This was a serious historical moment.
Well, and I think the decision that Naomi Osaka made at the tennis tournament in New York really kind of speaks to that, because she said, "I'm not playing. I'm not going to be involved in this." Before the tournament decided, we're not going to, you know, we're going to postpone ourselves. She basically said, "I'm not playing. I'll drop out of this tournament. I'll lose in the semis. Whatever. It's no big deal." And it kind of forced the tournament to say, "Well, no, you know, we want to continue to play." And so, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we're in some, you know, some unprecedented times. And look, I mean, there's so many issues. It's bigger than just one particular incident. But these incidences keep galvanizing, you know, the movements, and giving the players, just from an athlete's a sports perspective, the athletes the runway to go out and voice their opinions. Quite frankly, you know, we've had one, you know, you've had solo or lone athletes, you know, do things, and, you know, Muhammad Ali, Curt Flood was a baseball player in the 70s who kind of revolutionized that sport with free agency. And, you know, you've had, and Kaepernick a couple of years ago. I mean, the NFL now is basically admitting, like, we should have been listening to what was being said years ago, and Roger Goodell has been apologizing. You've had, you know, solo people doing things. Now you've just got entire teams and entire leagues saying, we have a voice that wants to be heard, and we're going to say it. And that is really just unprecedented.
You mentioned Naomi Osaka. Her statement, Shep, is powerful. However, I'm an athlete. Before I'm an athlete, I'm a black woman. And as a black woman, I feel as though there are more important matters at hand that need immediate attention. And then she goes on to say that watching the continued genocide of black people at the hands of the police is honestly making me sick to my stomach. I'm exhausted of having a new hashtag pop up every few days. And then she mentions Jacob Blake, Breonna Taylor, Elijah McCann, George Floyd. From a basketball perspective, one of the most powerful interventions has been the LA Clippers coach Doc Rivers, who had this to say after his side beat the Dallas Mavericks.
It's just so sad. You know, what stands out to me is just watching the Republican convention, and they're spewing this fear, right? Like, all you hear is Donald Trump and all of them talking about fear. We're the ones getting killed. We're the ones getting shot. We're the ones that we're denied to live in certain communities. We've been hung. We've been shot. And all you do is keep hearing about fear. It's amazing to me why we keep loving this country, and this country does not love us back. And it's really so sad. Like, I should just be a coach. And it's so often reminded of my color. You know, it's just really sad. We got to do better. But we got to demand better. Like, we got, you know, it's funny. We protest and they send riot guards, right? They send people in riot outfits. They go to Michigan with guns and they're spitting on cops and nothing happens. The training has to change in the police force. The unions have to be taken down in the police force. My dad was a cop. I believe in good cops. We're not trying to defund the police and take all their money away. We're trying to get them to protect us, just like they protect everybody else. I didn't want to talk about it before the game because it's so hard, like, to just keep watching that. That video, if you watch that video, you don't need to be black to be outraged. You need to be American and outraged. And how dare the Republicans talk about fear? We're the ones that need to be scared. We're the ones having to talk to every black child. What white father has to give his son a talk about being careful if you get pulled over? It's just ridiculous. And it just keeps going. There's no charges. Breonna Taylor, no charges, nothing. All we're asking is you live up to the Constitution. That's all we're asking for everybody, for everyone. Thank you.
The video of that is even more powerful than purely listening to the audio, Shep, but we've now had this situation in recent days where very prominent, very articulate black athletes have come out. They've effectively shut an industry down last night as a result of a walkout. Like Jared Kushner, senior advisor to the president, has gone on television today to question what authority they have and what qualification they have to question policy, which is slightly ironic from a man who got his job by virtue of being married to the president's daughter, which appears to be the case. But is there a sense that we have finally reached a societal tipping point as a result of not just the actions of sports people, but very prominent actions last night?
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, obviously Doc Rivers, I mean, he's been a leader since he was a player. When I was a kid in the 80s, when he played for the Atlanta Hawks and, you know, had been with the, you know, coach of the Celtics for a very long time, too. And, I mean, he carries a lot of weight and is very well respected. I mean, you know, I mean, obviously he made an incredibly impassioned statement. You know, I mean, and, you know, he, again, his father was a police officer. There's not... Look, I just personally believe, you know, I don't believe the cops just walk outside the door and decide they're just going to go start shooting people. I mean, I think situations, you know, they get out of hand. And unfortunately, you know, these are the results that you see sometimes on some days. I think that, again, with the players having this ability to go out and voice these concerns and bring out people who probably would not get involved in politics on a normal basis, getting them involved in a movement, getting them involved in a cause is going to lead to the change, I think. I mean, that's where the power is, you know, if LeBron James or Doc Rivers or some of the other, Steph Curry, I mean, some of these other players that have stepped up and said things, they're the... you know, the Al Sharpton and the Jesse Jackson, if you're deep into American politics, of the 70s and 80s. That's who they are now. I mean, that's the people, the type of people that are kind of leading this movement. And I think they're going to bring people to the table that are typically not involved in politics. Now, it's an election year. People see things how they see them through their lenses. There will likely be arrest. I know there's already been a federal investigation called for in this latest shooting. There likely could potentially be arrests like there have been in some of the other police shootings. I know they have not had one in Louisville yet with the Breonna Taylor situation. That attorney general says they're still working that case. Stuff like this, I mean, yes, there is a video of it, but there's more to that story. And that's the difficult thing about all of these situations is that it all plays out on social media, and you think you have the details of everything that happened, and quite honestly, you just don't. And it's hard for people to kind of pause and think about the entire, when it comes to an incident, to think about all of the factors that go into it. But again, I think comments like Doc Rivers made and the things that LeBron James has said in the last couple of days, it is all about getting people, again, aware, and people that are not typically involved in the political movements that don't go to vote in a regular presidential election, or they don't go vote in the House races or the Senate every second year, or, you know, every 6 year. I mean, it, you know, the American electoral system, you know, it's not every 4 years. It's, certain races are 2 years, certain races are six, presidential ones every four. So there's, you know, not everybody's involved in politics. They're talking about the turnout this year just being unbelievable. So, you know, this is not anything that is going to get swept away or swept under the rug or just forgotten about. This is going to be an issue that is on the forefront of when the NFL comes back in the next couple of weeks. It's going to be, the players are going to be doing protests and being heavily involved. I mean, Pete Carroll, the head coach of the Seattle Seahawks, said he could absolutely see teams protesting at games or potentially even forfeit a game because they don't play because they're protesting. So that will be, quite honestly, amazing to watch happen. Yeah. If that unfolds over the next couple of months.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Shep, we're glad to have you there, keeping an eye on it all for us. Thanks for joining us. You were saying there, Damien, you just sent me a message. The NBA are resuming. The NBA is hoping to resume. That's according to New York Times, and is a bit of a result in the Bulls game.
It's halftime, 1-1. So Keith Ward giving Bulls the lead after 21 minutes, and then the Hungarian hosts equalising with a penalty shortly afterwards. So 1-1 for Bulls. Winner on the night, so we'll see how that progresses over the next 45 minutes. Quick break to take, and then we're going to chat rugby with Stephen Ferris on the far side of this.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern, the nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry or snack. Natural protein your way.
Game on rugby.
And you're very welcome back to the programme. This is Damien O'Mara alongside Donegh O'Callaghan this evening. 51552 for your text at Game on 2FM. We'll get us on Twitter. Text in saying we should have mentioned Celtic exited the Champions League last night. Neil Lennon should go, according to our texter.
Just the 9 championships, was it?
But sure, come here. How many of them did he win? Brendan Rodgers got the momentum going. Did Ronnie Dyla start it all off? I did see it said by somebody earlier on that the fact that Celtic think they will, you know, it'll be a coronation of a 10th title, that not being in the Champions League is the most exciting thing from their season gone, which Celtic fans, if you have an opinion on that, you can text us. We will plough on with rugby. Good news from the IRFU not long ago, within the last 90 minutes or so, who've confirmed that the PCR, the COVID testing of players and staff at Leinster and Ulster, has produced 0 positive results. 155 players and staff tested across the 2 provinces this week. Results from Munster expected later on this evening. Connacht's results expected on Friday. It's good news, particularly in light of the fact that training for Ulster's squad had to be temporarily halted or recommenced today on confirmation that all players and support staff had tested negative. That as a result of academy players who had shown some COVID symptoms. It's I suppose we're going to chat about this and an awful lot more with Stephen Ferris is with us. Hiya, Stephen.
How you doing, lads?
Good to talk to you. It's inevitable that there are going to be COVID scares, if I can phrase it that way, across various sports as we look to try and get things back up and running. There must be massive relief up in Ulster this evening that there's a relatively clean bill of health and no doubts over the game this weekend against Leinster.
For sure, absolutely. You're right, Damien. I think, it was kind of leaked early on in the week that there was potentially a player or two that tested positive for coronavirus, and you never want anybody to test positive for coronavirus, but it is in the academy. There's been a number of young lads that have tested positive in the academy. The academy players train separately from the senior squad, and the senior squad did take a day or two off training, I believe, just to distance themselves to kind of figure out what the plan is going forward. But thankfully, Damon, the games are on this weekend. Ulster's a clean bill of health, just a few bruises from last week, I think. And, yeah, they're ready to go. So, yeah, it's never good of hearing young players test positive for coronavirus. But at the same time, let's look at the positive here. I believe everybody is safe and well, and, you know, the match is going ahead.
And, but, Stephen, you know, you think about what it must have been like, perhaps even for some of the Connacht players in recent days, when you hear stories like this. And, you know, to be fair to the provinces, I know Munster have their academy training in Thomond Park. Leinster's are in Donnybrook. I presume Connacht have done similar. That it's maybe a reminder to us all that irrespective of what plans you put in place, this is a virus that has the ability to cause us troubles along the way.
Yeah, it certainly is. And I think even, you know, you read that Paul Pogba has tested positive for coronavirus today. I think it's always going to raise its head, isn't it? I think every week there's going to be a different story, whether it's academy players or a senior player or somebody who's been away, out injured, and is going to come back in and is potentially contracted the virus as well. So I think every week, lads, there's going to be a different narrative to it. So I think the RFU and the provinces are doing a really, really good job in their testing policies and making sure that all the lads are fit and healthy before they go into games, and then obviously being retested the following week. So we've all to look forward to a couple of games this weekend, and hopefully we get the same standard of rugby that we got last weekend.
Just on that, Faiz, the standard of rugby, like for guys that didn't play pre-season friendlies, that probably haven't had games under their belt, I was blown away by the standard of both games. What did you make of it?
Yeah, so was I. Actually, Donegal, the traditional battle between all four provinces was fantastic. I was there on Sunday watching Connacht beat Ulster 26-20, and the contacts, just with no crowd, you can actually hear the bangs and clattering into each other loud and clear from the touchline. And the Leinster-Munster game was fantastic, obviously very, very close in the end. And, you know, I think it's a credit to all four teams that they got themselves ready. You know, no two or three warm-up friendlies to get things going. They get stuck in, and Peter O'Mahony, his post-match interview after the Leinster game, said it was probably one of the most physical games he's played in for a long period. He wasn't sure if that's because he hasn't played in 6 months, but it probably was. But of a player that's played in a lot of big games, to say how physical it was just shows you. And the standard rugby to play, Munster looked really good on quick ball. Leinster were very clinical when they had the opportunities. Connacht were a bit of a surprise for me. I didn't expect them to start so well, but they caught Ulster in the hop and they held their lead, and Ulster came fighting back, but unfortunately just left it too late.
Just on that, like Connacht did start well, and they were free running. I couldn't believe how much they were throwing the ball around, but Dan McFarlane was really annoyed with his Ulster team. And just for you, Fez, he made a comment that I found interesting. He said it looked like a team that watched Glasgow the night before lose to Edinburgh and know their fate. Were you surprised with the lack of bite out of Ulster?
Probably not early on. I think initially, the first kind of 10 minutes really kind of set down a marker. I think preferably Dan would have wanted Ulster not to really have qualified for the playoffs without even having to play the match. That might have been the get up and go, the G up that they needed to get off to a half decent start and put in a better performance. Like, Ulster, Marcel Coetzee was outstanding again. Every time he got the ball, he made yards, and then two or three phases later they dropped the ball, and uncharacteristic mistakes made by Ulster at crucial times. Their line out didn't function, 55% ball clean out, clean line out ball, and in an inter-pro derby that's not going to cut it. I suppose I was a little surprised. Any of Ulster's defeats this season, they've been losing at half time when they lost the game after 80 minutes. So when they were down at half time, I felt like it was going to be a real struggle to try and get the victory, and Conor proved me right in the end.
Stephen, is it too far out from the European game for a coach to start playing maybe mental messages through the media, or is there a touch perhaps of that going on here as well to refocus the mind ahead of what is the big challenge coming down the tracks?
Yeah, there's a big challenge coming down the tracks for sure. I think, probably Dan McFarlane will be, he'll be upset losing to Connacht. He played for Connacht. I think Jared Payne will be the one that will be getting boys for one-on-one video sessions. There's a couple of lads in defence, turning your back on an attack, especially in the wider channels. The stats don't lie when it comes to tackle success, and you know the Craig Kilroy, Jacob Stockdale's just over 60% to both of them in the Pro 14 this season. So they really need to up it going forward. I think Dan behind closed doors at the King's Band Stadium at the training facility will be having strong words. And you know, it is the first game, so it is easy for us to criticise or for me to criticise early on. But they should get their act together and hopefully come up good with you know, a couple of better performances over the next few weeks.
Stephen, just on it, I know we don't want to play too much attention to the young academy players, but just the interruption into training. We saw with the Munster lads losing out in 2 days. By my calculation, those Ulster lads will only get maybe a captain's run tomorrow. They won't be able to. Do you think that's going to affect them?
I think, yeah, of course it's going to affect them. You know yourself, Donner, when you don't get the work done early in the week, it's more of a mental thing than a physical thing. You know, just about getting through the reps. It'd be interesting to see if Ian Madigan starts this match. Obviously, he would have loved a bit more game time with Albie Mathewson. So it'll be just interesting to see what team selection is. But I would prefer to get a good week's training done than actually have to miss a few days and do a light captain's run and then have to, you know, go out and put in a good performance. So, yeah, it's probably messing with them slightly, but they're all professionals. And, you know, they'll deal with it in their own ways. And you know, everybody hopefully be ready and raring to go come kick-off.
Just a question for both of you. Stephen, you can pick it up first. Obviously, sorry, I should mention both those interprovincial games this weekend live on Radio 1. The news which has broken over the last couple of hours, and it's been reported in multiple quarters, that Japan are to pull out of the proposed 8-team tournament across November rather than trek all the way over here and deal with what has to be dealt with. Does it dampen it as a spectacle that presumably you would have to think now at this stage it's going to be either Georgia or Romania who might come in to replace them?
Yeah, I mean, you know what? I think we could have a conversation this day next week and it could completely change again. And that's the most frustrating thing for fans and for people who are wanting to go to games. We just don't know what each week's going to bring. So, you know, Japan's made that decision. It looks like they're not going to be travelling over. Hopefully another team steps into their, fill their spot. But then again, it could change again and other teams might pull out or what happens. So, yeah, it's obviously disappointing. Everybody would love to see Japan, who were the surprise package in the Rugby World Cup, you know, come over here and put in some great showings and see some of the quality players that we all seen in the World Cup. So, yeah, disappointing, but as I say, it's ever-changing, isn't it?
Yeah, Donica, your take on it?
Yeah, just for me, I suppose everyone would like to see Japan, but of course they're reporting in The Guardian that they mightn't travel because of COVID restrictions. For me, Damien, I would rather see a Georgia or a Romania in there, someone that's actually pushing Italy. I think Italy have underperformed for maybe too long and we need meaningful games. And what we saw at the World Cup is there's no jump up between tier 1 and tier 2, and Japan shows that a tier 2 nation can step up. But who are we helping in Europe? When I look at the Six Nations, it's a closed shop. Why don't we help Georgia a little bit more? Why don't we help Romania? And here's the perfect opportunity to do it. So look, it'd be disappointing to lose them, but I think it could be a benefit. Just one thing before we leave you go, Fraz, and it ties in with Japan, refereeing. We've George Clancy at this week in the Connacht, the Connacht, sorry, which game is that? George Clancy is doing the Leinster Ulster game and Frank Murphy is covering the Munster Connacht game. You know, what can we expect from the refs again? Do you think it's been refed well enough?
You know, Frank Murphy, like, he'll probably give Connacht another few decisions like he did last weekend.
All right, leave him.
Like, I think it really depends on the referees. I know you've been watching a lot of the Gallagher Premiership, as have I, and the amount of penalties that has been given away is just, it's crazy. And do you know what? It's actually killing the game as a spectacle. There's just so much stop-start. And anybody who is a bit of a neutral or football fans, and you ask them what their pet hate is about rugby, it's about the constant stoppages, and it's about, you know, there's the ball isn't in play long enough, and you know, there's all these scrums and there's all these lineouts. You know, why can't we just see more of this open play? And you know, when you're having over 30 penalties in a match, it really does interrupt things, and the players can't get into a flow either. So yeah, the referee, there's been a few rule changes, especially around the breakdown. And it is causing a little bit of havoc. But I thought last weekend with the two Interpro games, it did flow reasonably well. And hopefully we can continue on with that. George Clancy's a great referee, and Frank, I've known for many a year, and he's done a good job last weekend. So, yeah, hopefully we don't have any of the disasters that we've witnessed in the Gallagher Premiership and over in New Zealand.
See, lads, what's wrong here is you two boys should have taken up the whistle now. Coyle Frank was brave enough, and Joy Neville.
Neither of us can walk, I mean. Well,
could you imagine Stephen Ferris refing a match of murder?
Sure, geez, he refed loads of them when he was playing, but anyway, they leave that for another day. Stephen, good to talk to you as always. Thanks for being with us. Stephen Ferris with us there. Still 1-1 in Bowes game in Europe, 56 minutes played, and we're going to be chatting about a brilliant new Netflix documentary about Paralympic sport. It's called Rising Phoenix, and one of his stars will join us in 90 seconds.
FM. Game on 2FM with Green Fern. A quick and easy addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry or snack. Natural protein your way.
Game on. Check out the podcast
on the RTÉ Radio Player app.
That's blasted out the Uber Eats,
Damien. Sorry, the clock. You're not meant to point out these things.
I just wanted to mention Uber Eats.
The clock hit zero and it was like bang. You know, it's like I'm ready to go. I'm a coiled spring ready to go. The clock was like gone. I was like, here's me jingle. Get in there quick.
You're not wrong. Last night I had one of those hump Wednesdays, Damien. I'll be completely honest with you. You know, the ones where you're low.
You're doing well to know what day of the week it is. Let's be very honest.
The low motivation and struggling to find any positive side of stuff. So I sat down to watch a bit of Netflix, and I know what you're thinking, here he goes, another chat about Mary and Christina from Selling Sunset, or a bit of Joe Exotic from Tiger King. Do you watch any of those?
Do you know, I'm the only person in the free world, I think, who got rid of Netflix during the pandemic lockdown rather than indulged in it. We are firmly a Disney Plus house. Sorry, other streaming services are available. My 8-year-old and my 4-year-old, I have literally seen every inch of Disney Plus over the last couple of months.
It's amazing. Well, to be fair, you did swap Netflix for, was it Watch LOI?
Yes, Watch LOI. big fan. Well, I even paid for it.
Yeah, you need to get it back, and I know you've seen it as well. I watched an incredible documentary called Rising Phoenix, which you mentioned just before the break, which it looks at the impact the Paralympic Games have made for the global understanding of disability, diversity and excellence. The contributors of elite athletes and the insiders like Prince Harry is nothing short of compelling, but like all good Netflix shows, there's always someone that jumps out of the screen, and thankfully we're delighted to be joined from Kansas City by archer and world record holder Matt Statsman. Matt, how are you?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Matt, watch the documentary. It is compelling. It's an incredible story. I suppose there's two sides of it. There's the story of the Paralympics, and then there's all your own personal stories. For you, it must have been a great avenue to tell your story. What got you to those Paralympics?
Yes, when they reached to me about a year ago and asked if I'd be interested in participating. In the past, I have told my story, but this was like taking my story to a whole new level. And being able to put it on the kind of stage where the whole world can see it was definitely something I wanted to be a part of.
I suppose it was incredibly interesting to find the insight and what got you into your sport. And Matt, you might give our listeners some of the view that what drove you towards archery?
Was in 2010, stay-at-home dad trying to figure out how to just provide and put food on the table, and I couldn't find a job. I struggled with people trying to hire me and giving me a shot, and I saw a guy on TV, and he had a bow, and he went out in the woods, and he went hunting. Like, you know what? I've been hunting with my dad before when I was little. That is definitely something that I could do. So I got myself a bow, and started training and teaching myself how to shoot. That way I could literally put food on the table.
We mentioned
little did I know. I'm sorry.
You know, you're okay. Go on. Little did you know.
Little did I know that I was going to be on this amazing journey, and that took me where I am today.
Yeah, that's an incredible thing to be able to provide for your family. But speaking about your family growing up, I found it so interesting listening to your story about how your family treated you and your brothers hopping apples off you and just, you know, around your house like everywhere else, it was no different. You were just Matt.
Yes, my parents did an amazing job just teaching me to adapt to the world versus me, you know, versus the world adapting to me. They did a very good job of treating me normal. They gave me chores. Well, I grew up on a farm, so we had, you know, cows, pigs, and stuff like that. And I had to do chores just like my brothers and sisters, you know. And I was very honored that they treated me no differently than anyone else.
And Matt, for people who haven't seen the documentary or haven't followed your story, you were born without arms, and you're obviously, I don't know, is it better to describe you playfully as a stubborn individual or a very focused individual? Because you have obviously set about your course in life determined to do whatever it is you want, irrespective of how people might perceive your limitations as a result of your disability.
I would have to say I'm both stubborn and very determined. If I took no for an answer, I wouldn't be doing archery. Because there was a lot of people, when I first told them that I was going to do this, that they were like, you can't do that. You have no arms. Like, how are you going to do that? It's possible. And there was kind of stubbornness in me and that wanted to kind of prove them wrong that, you know, I can do that. And then once I started going, then it was the determination behind that to push me to the level that I was able to achieve. Mm.
I want to talk to you about Paralympic sport and particularly the 2012 Paralympic Games in a minute, but just one of the most striking aspects of the documentary is your adopted parents who gave you such an opportunity in life when other parents perhaps would have walked away from a child who was born with no arms and obviously was going to face challenges in life. But you effectively were conditioned and brought up in a world where you don't see challenges, you just see different ways of having to approach opportunities.
Yes, like I said before, I was lucky that my parents saw that, and that's how I was going to have to be raised. I remember, I don't remember, but I remember my mom telling me a story about something that I don't remember. But she said that when I was really little, there was these like little round pieces paper on the floor, and the doctor was like, you know, he's going to need people to help him with just everyday stuff. And as I'm sitting there listening to the doctor, I started picking up all these little pieces of paper that were like maybe the size of a dime with my toes, and I started picking them up and putting them in this bucket. And I think that's when my parents were like, you know what, we don't need doctors to tell us how to raise this child, because they also said it was going to cost millions of dollars and I was never going to be able to do anything on my own. And once they saw that, they were, I think they kind of made up their own game plan and just kind of let me run with it, really.
Just on the London Paralympic Games, we look at different sporting events, like, you know, there's a perception that the 68 Olympics changed how we enjoy the Olympics, the 1990 Soccer World Cup in a similar way. How significant were the London 2012 Games in not only the profile and global broadcasting of Paralympic sport, but how it forced a lot of people to engage with Paralympic sport and change the way that they speak about Paralympic sport?
You know, it definitely brought a lot of awareness and attention to what people would call like physical disability and the fact that people with physical disability can't play sports and at an elite level. I think it's like, for me, definitely it was a turning point in my life, and you can even see it in the world. You can see how people are now more respectful, and they get to, they understand more, you know, somebody with physical disability. So, for example, before games in 2012, there would be like kids who are, you know, you're walking through the store, and the kid, or the little child or whatever, is like, "Mom, look, the guy has no arms," and then the mom immediately like shushes the child and turns away, almost like we have a disease, right? But then after the 2012 games, what I started noticing where the same kids that were going, "Look, Mom, that guy has no arm," were like, you know, "Hey, I want to be like you. I want to shoot archery, or I want to, you know, race wheelchairs, or you know, and you're starting to see a lot of that kind of change, which is actually amazing.
Matt, thanks so much for joining us. The documentary's on Netflix. It's called Rising Phoenix, and we know this Saturday there's a Twitter feed. There's a virtual Twitter along party at 8 p.m. Irish time, where people can go in and express their views as they watch the brilliant documentary. I found it compelling. Your story is incredible, and thanks so much for joining us on Game On.
Thank you very much for having me, and I will do my best to tweet back.
Come on, Matt. 2FM.
Game On 2FM with Green Fern. Naturally good food packed with protein.
Game On 2FM.
Okay, Damien, you mentioned it earlier. Shamrock Rovers are in European action this evening, and the hardest working football correspondent in Ireland is in Talla Stadium. Tony O'Donoghue, how are you?
I'm good. I'm sheltering from the rain. Perfect night to be playing, actually. It's such a sad pity that we can't have fans at these games, because European nights are very special, of course. It is available on a stream for Shamrock Rovers fans. You still have time to buy that if you want. It's a tenner each, and good luck to them on that. But for the Hoops, the home tie was absolutely crucial. So they were the Irish team to get the luck of the draw on that one. So it'll all be done over 90 minutes or 120 minutes this evening. They're missing Sean Kavanagh and Rory Gaffney. Lee Grace suspended because he picked up, he was sent off indeed against Apollon Limassol last year. But Shamrock Rovers unbeaten in 14 competitive games. They've stuttered a little bit with the last couple of draws. I was here last Friday for the game against Shelburne when Rory Gaffney got that injury. They dropped points as well at St. Patrick's Athletic, but they look like they should have enough firepower for a rather youthful Finnish team, Ilves. They have a number of under 21 internationals. They've won just 4 of the 11 league games this season, and this will be a test because we've had disappointment with Dundalk, of course. Hopefully Bohemians can come through this evening, but we really hope that Shamrock Rovers can carry the Irish flag and get a victory and advance to another round tonight.
Very good, Tony. Thanks so much for joining us. Fingers crossed. Okay, that's it from all of us on Game On. A massive thank you to Jarlett and Ronan. Damien and Ruby are back with you tomorrow at 6. The amazing Tara Stewart is up next. Thanks for listening. God bless.